From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
Michael Dybert first visited Haiti in 1997 and served as the Reuters correspondent in Port-au-Prince from 2001 until 2003. Seven Stories Press has just published Notes from the Last Testament, The Struggle for Haiti, his book on the troubled island, or island nation. I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Dybert to today's underreported segment for an update on Haiti's very complicated security situation. Hi.
Thank you very much for having me, Leonard.
When were you last in Haiti?
I actually just got back from Haiti about a week and a half ago.
Did you go when Kofi Annan was there?
Yes, and I saw his press conference in tandem with René Préval, Haiti's newly inaugurated president.
And what led the head of the UN to go to Haiti?
Well, as you may know, after the departure of President Aristide in February 2004, in June of 2004, a multinational force that had been led by the United States was replaced by a UN force, which is known by its acronym MINUSTAH, which stands for the UN United Nations Mission to Stabilize Haiti. And they have been there ever since. And with the election of Préval, which happened in February, between the election and the inauguration in May, there was a period of relative calm in Haiti. There, you know, it had been very troubled, warring gangs and corrupt and murderous police officers and things like that. But after Préval's inauguration, there has been a noticeable uptick in unrest and in violence, especially in the capital of Port-au-Prince, not so much in the provinces, but especially in Port-au-Prince. And in advance of the renewal of the UN mandate, which happened at the UN last week, Préval wanted to, I assume, pay a visit to Haiti and show some support for the new Préval government.
The UN mandated, they voted to extend the presence of MINUSTAH. How did Haitians react to Kofi Annan's visit?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's kind of a complicated relationship that the United Nations has with the average Haitian right now, because there's a lot of sentiment in the country. I mean, people call them turista instead of MINUSTAH, tourists. And I think there's some sentiment, especially in Port-au-Prince, that the peacekeepers are not doing as much as they should to quell the violence. But at the same time, by virtue of their mandate, they can only basically go in a support role for the PNH, the Police Nationale d'Haïti, the Haitian National Police.
Well, they're a relatively small force, aren't they, MINUSTAH?
Well, they're mandated to be slightly over 8,000 right now with the departure of a Jordanian contingent. I think it's around 7,000.
But we're talking about a country of 8 million citizens.
Yeah, 8.5.
So that's a small group considering the large population of Haiti, and most of the soldiers come from Brazil. So is there a language problem as well?
Well, one thing that I found that was a problem is I went to a neighborhood in central Port-au-Prince called Martissant, where there had been a massacre that had taken place a couple weeks ago. And there were nine, it's a huge neighborhood, very big, and there were nine peacekeepers that I saw, only nine, all of whom were Sri Lankan, none of whom could speak English, French, Creole, or Spanish. So they were at somewhat of a loss to communicate with the population.
What was the massacre all about?
Well, that's the thing, is this neighborhood, Martissant, has historically been something of a bastion for different gangs that different politicians are, you know, apt to use in Haiti as kind of their muscle. And from basically what I was able to pin down, there was some gangs in a neighborhood called Grand Avin that were loyal to Mr. Aristide, and then there were other gangs that were in a neighborhood called Tibouan Dekat that were loyal to some members of some rogue members, I should say, of the police force. And you know, essentially, they were fighting over who controls the neighborhood. And it was a very sobering place to visit. There were, I would say, probably about 1,000 burned homes. There was a lot of blood on the ground, a lot of shell casings and things like that. And people were fleeing the area.
Hasn't the boss of Grand Ravine been linked to the murder of Jean Dominique?
Well, actually, it's a guy by the name of Tilou, who is a gang leader, who was arrested connection with the murder of Jean Dominique, broke out of jail in 2005. And he has been, people in Grand Ravine and some people in Tibois told me that he is operating out of Grand Ravine, this area in Martissant.
So, but nobody has been able to capture him? Are the police or Minusta effective enough to even capture somebody like this?
Well, this is the thing that was worrisome, is I went all over this neighborhood and I saw not one single Haitian police officer there. And I was there for 2 days solid.
Well, we're talking about 6,000 police to cover this whole nation of 8.5 million citizens. So are the police working with Minusta?
Yes. Well, I think actually now since the inauguration of Préval for his second mandate as Haiti's president, that the coordination between Minusta and the Haitian police forces has been much better. And I think one thing that has to do with is the security team that Préval has put in place to head the police and to head public security is very well regarded, both by Haitians and by the international community.
But haven't there been allegations of corruption in the police force?
Sure. I mean, especially, as you may know, in 1994, when Aristide came back, I mean, he disbanded the army after he returned, and the Haitian National Army, which had been a very abusive institution and used, by a lot of dictators to cling to power, and they were replaced by the Haitian police, who many people, I think, thought would become and hoped would become a more neutral body that would enforce the law more neutrally. And unfortunately, during the 2001 to 2004 tenure of Mr. Aristide, they were an absolutely political body, and they were a body that was basically acting on behalf of the executive branch.
So we have the police being a political body. We have these gangs allied to various political forces. Is there anything that isn't political in Haiti?
Hunger. I mean, it seems like no matter who...
That's a result of the politics.
Exactly, which is something, I mean, it always was interesting to me that Haitians were never classified as political refugees, but rather economic refugees in the United States. But the fact is, in Haiti, that politics has destroyed the economy.
My guest is Michael Dybert, whose book, Notes from the Last Testament, The Struggle for Haiti, has just been published by Seven Stories Press. So how significant is it that Minusta's stay has been extended? Is this sort of thing routine?
Well, I think it was somewhat actually disappointing to people on the ground in Haiti, because I know Mr. Préval and Mr. Annan were hoping for 12 months extension, and they opted instead for 6 months with the option to renew. But, I mean, I think there's some worry of people on the ground in Haiti that is this the UN looking to perhaps cut its losses and leave Haiti before the job is done, which is what I think a lot of people would say that they did in 1994.
And what would the job being done mean?
I guess,
isn't violence escalating there, if anything?
I guess what people would say is that what needs to be done is institutions need to be reinforced. So ideally in Haiti, every 5 years you will have another president that will leave, but the institutions, the judiciary, the police, things like that, the public administration will remain the same and hopefully be very competent and not be politicized. And I think that's what people are hoping that will be able to be accomplished with Préval's new term and with the presence of Minusta.
But I've heard that Minusta is requesting support from SWAT teams. That sounds like a rather dire situation.
Yes, well, when I spoke to the chief diplomat for Minusta in Port-au-Prince, he said that what they would be requesting were SWAT teams and anti-kidnapping units because there's been a kind of plague of kidnapping that has occurred in Haiti in the last 2 years especially.
Used in the same way as it is in some other countries as a way of getting money to support political organizations, or is this just criminal activity?
I think it's kind of complicated. I mean, myself, given the breadth and depth of the problem of kidnapping in Haiti, I don't think it's just poor people doing it. I think there has to be some connection with some of the elites and some of the wealthier elements in the country. But another thing...
You mean evening scores? Or?
Yeah. Well, also, you have to think, I mean, for instance, Teleco, which was the state telephone company under Aristide, there was 4,000 employees for a company that many people say could run effectively with 1,500 employees. So all of those people were fired. And, a lot of people, I think when you're in situations of extreme distress and extreme hunger, I think that might partially explain at least some of the rise in kidnapping.
And who's being kidnapped? Were you in danger? Because journalists are kidnapped in some of the more troubled places in the world.
Well, a lot of people, that's the interesting thing is, I mean, it initially started with the elite being kidnapped, people, business people and things like that. But now it's gone on to every level of society. I mean, you have taxi drivers who are being kidnapped and freed for something like $500, but I think at this point it's affecting every level of Haitian society.
Now, the elite are often blamed for much of Haiti's problems because every time there's talk of reform, the elite, the wealthiest of the wealthy, and usually the lighter skinned people. Do the two things tie together?
Well, one thing that's interesting is historically the elite in Haiti, the mulattoes, you know, have been kind of the economic elite. I mean, they were very much, I'd say, marginalized under the government of François Duvalier, Papadoc, who was a noirist, who was a very kind of a black power kind of dictator. But then, you know, under his son and afterwards, they kind of regained some of their former status. But what was interesting with the return to Haiti of Aristide in 1994, there was formed, I would say, a wealthy kind of black political class of politicians who had as much money as a lot of people in the elite did. So now that's gotten a little more complicated. I think the main criticism a lot of people level against the elite is that there's, for years in Haiti, been a very small portion of the population making a huge amount of profit, and there's been the poor majority, in absolute misery. But unfortunately, I haven't seen many politicians of any stripe who seem like they're seriously trying to alleviate that.
Is there any nostalgia for Papa and Baby Doc?
I think there's some nostalgia for Baby Doc, not Papa Doc because he killed too many people. But, I mean, when you talk to, for instance, when I go to Haiti, I make a point of always taking public transportation, and I speak Creole, and I like to talk to the regular man on the street to hear what they're thinking. And when they talk about some of the times of Baby Doc, they talk about, well, we had electricity, you know, 23 hours a day, we had running water, we had a lot of tourists. Of course, if you spoke out about politics, that was it. You know, you disappeared into the jails or you were killed or exiled or something like that.
You said that the situation has deteriorated since René Préval actually took office as president. Has he done anything to address the gang violence in Haiti?
Well, yes. I mean, I think one thing that many people were happy about was when they looked at the security team that he put in place. Supported the continuation of head of the police of a guy called Mario Andrasol, who's a police captain who was exiled for a while in the early 2002, and he's somebody who's viewed as a very honest, very decent guy who's committed to weeding out corruption in the police and confronting the gangs as well. And for Secretary of State for Public Security, he named a man called Luc Usher Joseph, who's also very well regarded. And actually, just last week, a man by the name of Claude Gassant, who was a judge who was in charge of investigating the Jean Dominique murder, who had to flee into exile, was named as the commissaire of Port-au-Prince.
Now, Jean Dominique was a broadcast journalist who was forced into exile a number of times, but by speaking the truth, as many Haitians saw it, he put himself in danger. Aren't all of these people the honest ones, the ones who might actually be effective in some way, putting themselves in danger?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of fear, you know, among the, I would say, the decent people who are trying to better the country of, you know, what the fate will be of people like Mario Andrasol and people like Claude Gassant, who are at great risk to themselves, are trying to improve the situation in Haiti.
René Préval ordered the disarmament of the gangs, and the gangs were refusing to disarm because they claimed the UN is staging deadly raids. Mm. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, from what I've heard, you know, from my friends in neighborhoods like Cité Soleil and things like that, which is a very poor neighborhood which has a lot of gangs in it, and Port-au-Prince, is when, especially when the Jordanian troops were there, you know, they would get fired on by gangs, but then they would respond with kind of just this storm of gunfire that would, you know, hit anything in its path, basically. Now that the Brazilians have taken over in Cité Soleil and some of the neighboring neighborhoods, I've heard it's not so bad, but at the same time, you know, I think one of the things that's really to blame for this problem is just hopelessness, because I knew a lot of the guys who were gang members during the Aristide years who are all dead now, except for one of them, Amaral, who's still alive. But the rest of them are all been killed by the police or whatnot. And almost every one of those guys, there were some who were hardcore criminals, but most of them, had they had the opportunity for a decent job that they could support their families with, they would have put down their guns in a heartbeat.
My guest is Michael Deibert, D-E-I-B-E-R-T, whose book from Seven Stories Press is called Notes from the Last Testament, The Struggle for Haiti. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820 or online at WNYC.org. What brought you to Haiti in 1997? Did you already speak Creole?
No. Well, it's interesting. In 1997, I didn't go down in the capacity of a journalist. It was just a country I had always really wanted to visit. And I was living in New York and just, I guess, kind of, suffering from ennui or something, so I wanted to change. So I went down there, and it was an amazing experience. And I was there for a couple of months and traveled around the country and met the people and really put the hook in me to want to go back.
By the way, this is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So how much real control does René Préval have?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I would say that looking at his government and the formation of his cabinet, people are very happy with that because it's something that reached out to a lot of different political parties, including people who were, you know, adverse to his reelection. But I think the question
and
is...
And it was an election that some people questioned. We've seen a number of elections that have caused trouble in Mexico, for example.
Or the United States.
Right. Yeah. And there was controversy over the ballots in his election, wasn't there?
Yeah. I think a lot of people, I mean, it seemed at the time, I was not in Haiti at the time of the election, but from all the reports I've read, you know, it seemed that Préval was heading towards a victory that would preclude his necessity to go to a runoff with his nearest challenger, who was a politician named Leslie Manigat. And when it seemed like his percentage was going down, a lot of people, a lot of his supporters, I think, felt that the election was being stolen from him. So essentially, I guess it was just basically decided to award him the election, you know, which I think many observers think that he legitimately won.
Well, he had links to Aristide in the past, but he's done everything possible to separate himself from Aristide.
I would say that's the case. I mean, he served as Aristide's first prime minister before the coup in 1991, but after Aristide's return to office in 2001, I mean, especially considering the fact that many people blamed Aristide for blocking the investigation into the murder of Jean Dominique, and from all the sources I know close to Préval, his links with Aristide dwindled to almost none. And now since he's returned to office, I mean, all of those guys who I mentioned, André Sol, Hucher Joseph, Gassant, all of them went into exile under Aristide. So it seems to me that Préval is sending a bit of a message by placing them at the head of the security situation.
If the gangs were disarmed, what options would be available to them? Do they have other things that they can do, considering the state of the economy?
Well, I think in some way, I mean, the state of Haiti's economy is in some ways an opportunity in the sense of there's so much that needs to be done in Haiti. There are so many roads that need to be built. There's infrastructure that needs to be constructed. You know, there's all kinds of things. I mean, the country is a virgin country in some ways. And I think there's a lot of room for investment from foreign countries, and I think there's a lot of room for employment for the local Haitians as well.
Well, I've read that 76% of Haitians live on less than $2 a day. 40% of the families are malnourished. That sounds like a catastrophic situation. Is Haiti still the poorest nation in the Americas?
Yes.
So what is life like for the average Haitian?
Well, it's extremely difficult, and, you know, I mean, it's a scramble to figure out how you're going to eat and how you're going to feed your kids, let alone send them to school. And, you know, there was a neighborhood that I used to go to, Village Democratie, which was housed in the ruins of an old Duvalier's torture chamber called Fort Dimanche. And people there were so poor they were eating clay that they baked into cakes and seasoned with some bouillon cubes.
I've read that in parts of Haiti, having AIDS is seen as a meal ticket because international organizations have begun providing food along with medicine for AIDS patients. Did you encounter anything like that?
No, I mean, I never encountered any kind of abuse in that sense of a program. And one thing I will say
one person is quoted as saying, better to die tomorrow of AIDS than of hunger today.
Right. Well, I will say one thing about the AIDS crisis in Haiti is that pretty much every government, despite all the chaos, has, I think, taken a very aggressive and proactive role in educating the population about AIDS and trying to stem the spread of the disease. And to a large degree, they've been quite effective.
Hurricane season is approaching. Have tropical storms been a problem for Haiti in the past?
Yeah. I mean, in the fall of 2004, there were several thousand people who were killed outside of a northern city called Gonaive. And in May of that year, there were about 1,000 people who were killed on the Dominican border. And the problem is with Haiti's deforestation, because so many trees have been cut down for firewood and things like that. There's nothing to hold the soil. So whenever you have a hurricane, for instance, you have these deluges of rocks and of dirt and mud and things like that that just sweep through the villages. And a lot of people die.
We talked earlier about nostalgia for Baby Doc, if not Papa Doc's period of rule. Is that troubling? After all, he wasn't as bad as his father, but he definitely was a dictator, and
Absolutely.
It was a period of polarization, economic polarization in the country.
Well, I think the thing that's most saddening to those of us who really care about Haiti and have been involved with it for a long time is to see, basically, there was a very striking moment I had at the National Palace after Annan's press conference with Préval, which is I walked to the balcony there looking over the park, the Champs-Mars, and you see the slums of a neighborhood called Bel Air rising in the distance. And I realized that I had done the same thing when Preval had accepted the credentials of U.S. Ambassador Brian Dean Curran in 2000. I had the same moment of walking to the front of the place and seeing the slums. And so little has changed for the average Haitian over the last 10 years, you know, despite this feeling, despite a lot of decent people working to change, it seems like they've been able to have very little effect to some degree.
Well, there's always a problem when you have optimism, when you think that things are going to change for the better and then they don't.
Yeah.
And I suspect that's a problem that Preval is going to have to contend with.
Yes, and I think one thing that's really important is for, you know, there was a, I can't remember the exact figure, but I believe it was something like $175 million pledged by the international community at a donors conference in Haiti last month. And they really have to follow through with that, and they have to follow through with it quick, because I think as with the peacekeepers that they're going to be bringing, the SWAT and anti-kidnapping, Preval, I think, has a small window of opportunity during which he can really do some change in Haiti, and I think now is a better opportunity than perhaps at any time for the last 30 years, and it should be seized by the international community.
Haiti was once a popular tourist destination. Is that totally dead now?
It's dead to some degree, but Haiti is, I mean, I don't want to paint a completely bleak picture. It's a beautiful country. The people are great, very easygoing, great sense of humor. The music is great. And there are still, you know, it's one of the few places in the Caribbean where you have stretches of picture-perfect beach that are not completely overrun by a Club Med or something like that. So I think still, if they stabilize the political situation, I think it has great tourism potential.
So you're optimistic despite all the problems?
Guardedly optimistic, yes.
I thank you so much for being with us today. I've been speaking with Michael Dybert, who is the author of Notes from the Last Testament, The Struggle for Haiti. It is published by Seven Stories Press. And thank you so much for being part of Underreported.
Thank you very much, Leonard.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.